Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Dr. Williams is the author of the acclaimed book, Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together After Child Abuse. Dr. Williams is on the senior leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And Dr. Williams travels the United States speaking and training professionals, parents, and victims about the importance of dealing with abuse and personal trauma head on and not being afraid to break the silence of your own personal pain. Feel free to call in to tonight's show at 888-627-6008 and speak with Dr. Williams and his guests live on air. And now, your host, Dr. Williams.
Welcome to the most beautiful city in the country, Houston, Texas. And here we are in my home. We're just going to have a fantastic night tonight. Welcome to Breaking the Silence. And like we tell you every week, that if you would just join us for a few minutes, we're going to give you some stuff that maybe you can use in the week, draw you closer, make you a better person, bring some positivity into your life. And most of all, if you've experienced some kind of trauma, stress, anxiety, turmoil, disappointments, we're going to help you get through that tonight with something that we said. And I tell you what, tonight is going to be a guaranteed great program. So we're just excited about having you on. And we always love everybody that's on the program and letting us know how we're doing. And feel free to reach out to us at 888-627-6008. 888-627-6008, or you can give right on Facebook. We, my understanding is we are live all over the world in all kinds of new platforms tonight. So our audience base probably just expanded by two or threefold. So no telling how many millions and millions of people are watching us tonight. So James and Lisa, no pressure whatsoever. This is going to be just a fun night. Before we bring in our guest tonight, I just have a few things I want to share with you. And I always like doing this because I think it's just kind of nuggets of truth that maybe somebody needs to hear. So this is the time that you want to grab a piece of paper and ink pen. I'm just going to throw out a couple of these because I think it's relevant to what we're going to be talking about tonight. A couple things that you really need to realize, understand, to be able to grow and deal with reality in your life. And these are just a couple I'm going to bring up to you, and hopefully I won't get too rattled and long-winded. But, you know, we'll let you know that everything is the way it ought to be right now. I don't mean that to be that if you're going through something negative. I just want you to know that often things, when they start falling apart, is actually things that are falling into place. And I really want you to catch the reality that when you think, oh, my lands, everything around me is just absolutely disintegrating. It's sometimes it has to break to be able to fall, to come together as a different vehicle to get you to a location that you would have never got to unless it fell apart to begin with. So there's hope there. Often it's not until you are lost, until you can truly find your true self. And I think not only in the religious world, but I think in the addiction world, I think in the trauma world and the anxiety world that I came from, until I finally came to a point in my life, in that crossroads in my life where I said, I can't do this on my own. That's when things turned around, because you can't. You need other people. You need other resources. You need other, you need God. You need all these other things that can come in. So until I actually admit, this book here is coming out in a few weeks, and that has a whole chapter on how can you get to a destination if you, you know, got a GPS system, you can put in that I want to go to Dallas. Okay. So you put in the GPS, where do you want to go to? But if you don't put where you are, that GPS is never going to be able to figure out how to get you there. It's the same way in our life. Until we come to the realization of where we really are, and I think you're going to hear that tonight in our guest story, that when you finally look in the mirror and you go, wait, I can't play the game anymore. I can't convince anybody else that I'm okay. I have an issue. I need help. And at that point, then life can begin again. And the last thing I want to share before we go introduce our guest is the first thing you need to do and huddle up and lean in. Before you can be anything to anybody else, you have to take care of yourself first. You can't be a good dad. You can't be a good husband. You can't be a good friend or wife. You can't be a good employee. You can't be good anything until you take care of yourself. And then when you are at your utmost and you're doing good, then you can actually be what you need to be for everybody else. A lot of times we try to play the game where we take care of ourselves last. You have to take care of who you are up front. That's just a few little tidbits of truth for you tonight. And between me and you, that didn't cost you an extra penny at all. So that was all free of charge. We're going to walk through tonight from an awesome town of some of the most loving and caring people that I've ever met in my life, Carterville, Illinois. We're going to welcome an old hat that has been here a couple of times, James Brown and his lovely wife, Lisa Brown. So welcome from Carterville, Illinois. Y'all there?
Thank you. Yes, we're here.
Got a wave. Good evening and welcome to the program. How y'all doing?
Good.
Good. You know, we had James on a few weeks ago, and you kind of told your story. You told everybody, and I've got more people that reached out to me on that. I know you all have too, and I'm watching you on your pages and the different things of how people are encouraging, but also that I've also been on the Recover Us site and watched every one of your videos, James, that you made for them, and bless you on doing that. Last week we had Kelly and Seth, the people that actually helped you in your recovery. Between me and you, before we bring Lisa into this, James, how you doing?
I'm doing good.
Have you been sober? How many days you clean?
Gosh.
Coming up on
about 4 months. A little over 4 months.
Okay.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's kind of hard to, because where I used to look at the big picture, now I just kind of, I take it moment by moment. I don't, where I used to like, I would wait for that 30-day point and then that 40-day point and then that 2 month. I just, now it's a moment by moment. You know, and it's always going to be probably a part of me. But that's why, you know, taking it moment by moment, you know.
James, do you, for people that, because we are on a whole bunch of different platforms, our bandwidth expanded multiple times tonight with new viewers this evening, with what BBS Radio is doing. Just nutshell, real quick, without going into everything, what did you need the recovery for? What really was the years, and just what happened to you as far as what was you addicted to, what was bringing you down, what you was involved with. So everybody that's never heard your story can get us caught up before we bring Lisa in to see the wife's perspective.
Mainly it was drinking. I would say it was the drinking more than anything. That mixed with benzodiazepines, Klonopin. I was taking pain meds. I've had, you know, several back surgeries, procedures, a few major back surgeries that caused me to, and I still deal with chronic pain on a daily basis, which is something that I struggle with. It was the drinking that got to the point to where I couldn't go a day. I would wake up in my first thought of that day was, well, when am I going to be able to, you know, get out of the house to head to the liquor store and buy that fifth of vodka? And that mixed with taking my Klonopin was just a path. It was a path to destruction. And I was leading such a destructive life, not just to myself, but to my wife and my children. And that's the hardest part that I still have to deal with and realize, is that even though I'm getting better, it's a lot harder and a lot longer process to fix what I did to my family and what I did to my wife.
You know, I tell you what, that's a perfect turn the corner here. Segue. Didn't know you knew I knew that word, did you? Segue into the brilliant topic of the program, because I think sometimes we often have programs after programs. I could find a lot of people to come on and tell me about what they have gone through. But I think the hidden damage that goes maybe even deeper than what you've experienced inside is, Lisa, what's happened to you and how you dealt with it and the little pretty puppy dog behind you.
I just noticed that.
No, let the dog, you know, I love that. Let the dog photobomb us all night. That's fine. I love it. But first of all, Lisa, tell me, how long have you all been married?
24 years.
It'll be 25 years this April.
It does not seem possible that you ought to have your 25th anniversary. And how many kids you have?
Just two.
Two. And Lisa, do you have a job out in the workplace?
I do. Yes, I do. I'm a nurse and I do consulting, generally in long-term care facilities, although that's sort of been shut down over the past few months. So I've been just in our local office instead.
Okay. Now that brings, I did not know that. So that's going to bring a different perspective, I think, even from your profession into this. And when did you, Lisa, first notice anything that was out of the norm with what James was going through? Well, you know, how well did he hide this from you?
Well, I mean, it was sort of progressive. I mean, he had, there were a lot of issues years ago whenever he had joined a band and they were traveling. And so I sort of wasn't aware, because a lot of that was done when he was gone. But then, you know, one thing built on another and has just increased in severity over the years. And so I think really when it got to its worst point was a few years ago, whenever he was, you know, he was on pain medication. And then he was additionally placed on medication for anxiety. And so the combination of those, then it didn't take very much alcohol to really compound that and bring dramatic results. And so he hid it, you know, from us for the most part. So when the kids were little, they didn't really realize a lot of it, because it wasn't like he was ever inside our house drinking, or he was kind of secluded either out in the garage or at someone else's house. So it wasn't like he was doing that right around us, you know, in the living room. But especially as the kids got older, you know, he would kind of come in and out of the garage, and you know, it was obvious. And so really the last few years, it just kept steadily getting worse and worse and worse. So
James, how many years are we talking about? 1, 2, 3,
15.
10. How many?
15.
15.
Mm-hmm.
So more than half of your married life, mm-hmm. you was under the influence per se.
Mm-hmm.
But how many of those years was it really a major issue?
10. That's probably 6 years, last 6 years.
Okay.
Yeah. Mainly after, like, she was whispering to me, if you didn't hear, where it really hit for me rock bottom was, and I shared with you, was when my brother died. And, you know, when I found my brother after he'd been dead for 4 days, that kind of, to me, I just didn't care anymore. I thought, you know, it can't get really any worse than what I've just experienced. And so I just kind of, you know, adapted to a lifestyle I just didn't care. I didn't, you know, it wasn't that I didn't love my wife or my children or my family. I hit a really, really dark place, and I thought that, as most addicts do, I thought that I was really the only one that really knew. I knew she had some idea, but I just thought, you know, but.
Yeah. So, and you'll probably get to this in your questions, but anytime, you know, anyone tried to talk to him about it, it wasn't well received. And he, you know, the times that I would bring it up, he wouldn't believe me, you know, that like he didn't realize how affected he was. And so I would try to tell him that. And of course, he wasn't accepting of that from me. He was either in denial about that, or so he didn't want to hear that, or he didn't believe it. He kind of was caught up in his own reality, kind of formulated his own reality, I guess.
Lisa or James, do you feel then that one little comment I made in the intro, that until you figure out really where you are honestly and really take all the I'm okay, I'm fine, I got this under control, I only have two drinks, when you've had two cases or whatever it is, because that's always an alcoholic's response. How many drinks have you had tonight? Oh, two, or a couple. They never count up. That was, you know, before I got out of bed.
That was always the answer. You know?
But do you think, how important do you think that is to actually come to that reality of, this is an issue? And James, how often did you push that off when she would ask you? Could you buffaloed her for quite a while with that?
You know, it honestly, Greg, it got to the point to where I think what really opened my eyes, she just stopped asking. She stopped everything. She, like I said before I went into to Recover Us and sought recovery, I wasn't coerced. She didn't, she stopped. She stopped asking me. She stopped caring. For me, that was the hardest part, because that we all want attention. We all want, you know, I wanted somebody to be there for me. You know, I wanted somebody to tell me that it was going to be okay. I wanted somebody to say, hey. And when that all stopped and I found myself alone, you know, especially when I didn't want to, you know, that's when it got to the point where I didn't want to live anymore, didn't care to live, didn't care if I died. And I think that was probably the hardest part for her, was to completely pull away from me and to turn me over. And it wasn't that she stopped loving me.
Right.
It wasn't that she stopped caring, but it got to the point to where that for her, that was, I guess, her self-preservation, the mechanism that kicked in and just put the brakes and said, I'm done. So that makes sense.
It does make sense. And I'm picking up what's happened in my own life. So anybody that's listening to the program with any kind of issue or traumatic event, anxiety, you're a survivor of any type of situation that really just gets up into your mental attic and kicks shingles loose, you know, and it's just like, okay, I messed up. I would do the exact same thing, James. I don't know if that's what you were saying or not. I want to clarify. So when she would come to you prior to her saying, I'm done, I'm not going to approach it, and say, hey, I want to help you, are you okay, and all that, you were trying to push her away and avoid it? And
oh, yeah, definitely.
Even though inside, you wanted her to be right there.
Yeah.
I did the exact same thing. I did the exact same thing with every issue I ever had. People would come up to me and say, Greg, are you okay? I'm fine. Go on. I want to be alone. And just as soon as they turn their back and walk away, I go, why'd they leave me? What? Where'd you go? Come on. Don't you love me? So I would say one thing, but I would mean the other. Mm-hmm. And I think therapists, social workers, physicians, and people that the professional side that's watching tonight, just because they say they're fine doesn't mean they're fine. And that's the title of my second chapter in the new book. I'm fine. Neither are you. And I think that's exactly what we mean. Now, Lisa, we're going to take our first break, but on the other side of this, I want to really drill inside of you and the emotions that you dealt with when you knew it was to the point that it was an issue, and how was it affecting you emotionally and affecting the kids. And I really think there's thousands of people, spouses, husbands or wives, that are listening and really waiting to hear that answer. And we're going to get that just on the other side of our first commercial break. Call somebody, tell them to get on BBS Radio or get on the Facebook Live or get on YouTube Live, whatever, and just watch in tonight, because you're not going to forget the next 40 minutes of Breaking the Tides. We'll be right back after our first commercial break. This couldn't be coming at a better time. Have you ever felt like you were just trapped and couldn't find your way out of darkness? Have you ever felt like you were drowning and fighting to find your next breath? Well, coming in 2020 will be the second of a three-part trilogy, my new book, Overcoming the Darkness, The Roadmap to Hope. This new book will provide you a step-by-step approach of how to reach that destination, that important destination called hope. Now, two additional resources are going to be made available when this book is released. One, The Map to Hope. It'll be a handy guide that you can carry around with you, put in your briefcase or put in your purse. And this guide is going to help you find your way when you're stuck in life looking and searching for hope. And then the other resource, the Overcoming the Darkness Companion Journal. I have always believed that journaling is the first step to finding real healing and hope in your life, and this journal will guide you down that path. I'm excited about these resources and this new book that's going to be released in 2020, the Summer of Hope. Now back to the next segment of Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams right here on BBS Radio. Love that music. I can listen to that all night. Welcome back. And we have James and Lisa Brown from Carterville, Illinois, just dear friends. And I don't think I have friends more dear than those that sometimes you haven't talked to in 10 years, but immediately pick up the phone. It's just like you pick up exactly where you left off. And James, I appreciate you being willing to share the story. But Lisa, I think the impact of what you're fixing to share is as important or more, because this kind of abuse, trauma, addictions, behavior, not only affects him, there's shrapnel that you got hit with emotionally. Let me inside your head just a little bit as a wife and a mom. What were some of the emotions? And I want to let you know, I respect and applaud you for even going here tonight, because it may not be easy, but there's people sitting on the edge of their seats right now waiting to hear. And if you could look in their eyes and talk to them, that's kind of where I want you to go. What's some of the emotions that you felt during this process? And don't feel like you have to nutshell it, just some of those things.
Yeah, so as he said, it's been a long time. So I sort of felt like I've cycled through a lot of different emotions at various times. And so I mean, there was anger, bitterness, loneliness, hopelessness, apathy. And then sort of over time came layers and layers of callousness, you know, because after a while you just sort of have to protect yourself. You have to go on, you know, while he's, you know, preoccupied with all that he's preoccupied with, I still had to go to work and do school with the kids and get food on the table and do laundry and pay the bills and, you know, everything else that was on my plate. And so, you know, years ago, I used to say I felt sort of like an automaton, I think is how you say it, where you just go through the motions of every day because you don't really have time to reflect or think, or because there's just so much to do all the time. And so a lot of issues probably I didn't address as much as I maybe should have, because there wasn't time for that. But underneath all of that was a repression of all of this, especially bitterness and loneliness. You know, it's very lonely to be at the place that I am. You know, it's hard. I guess it's gotten harder even as the kids have gotten older, because there came a time where we couldn't really go out socially. Because I never knew what frame of mind James would be in. And so we couldn't really go out as a family and include him because we weren't really sure what that was going to look like. And it was embarrassing sometimes for us. And I felt bad for him, not even knowing how he was appearing to others. And then that left the kids and I doing things on our own. Which, you know, when you're in a community where most families do things together, that sort of leaves you in a place where there's nowhere. You know, there's nowhere, you can't go as a family unit, but if you go by yourself, you feel like you stick out among the crowd. And so luckily we like being at home. The kids and I really don't, we're not people that have to get out a whole lot, but really it's just a lonely place because you don't fit anywhere. And after a while, people, you know, you feel like at least people don't want you to be around because it brings you never know what that's going to bring. So yeah, there's lots of emotion there, but I guess over the years, but I have to say that in all my times of loneliness, that I have found a closeness to the Lord that I would have never felt otherwise if I was in the happiest of circumstances. You know, when you're driven to that place where you're all alone, you find that companionship with Him and the joy that He brings that no other circumstance could bring, no matter if James wasn't in the circumstance that he was, and we had, you know, the best house and the best life. And so sometimes I think about that and think, I feel like at one point in time, I was probably rather spoiled in my expectations in life. And I feel like I've just, the Lord's been close to me. The Bible says the Lord's close to the brokenhearted, and I feel a closeness to Him that I might not have experienced otherwise.
Wow, that was one heck of an answer, and a great one. You've hit my texts are going. I'm scrolling down; they're just going off the numbers. That's unbelievable. Was there any resentment that is just like, wait, I have to be the responsible one here, and can you not put your big boy pants on and help me? Did everything fell on you?
That was a constant, right?
Yeah. How much of that has gone away now?
Well, I mean, I feel like we're just on the cusp of starting to work through issues. So it would be premature to say that at this point. Like he was saying earlier, it's sort of one moment at a time, one day at a time, one step at a time. And, you know, it's taken a long time to get to this point, and it's going to take a long time to heal, you know, from that point. So yeah, there's just a lot of repair that is needed, and, you know.
I'll let you take a breath. James, what do you think when you hear this? I know it's heartbreaking, but what's your emotions on that right now?
It's hard. I guess the hardest part was it wasn't that I never loved her or cared, or I mean, I love my wife and I love my son and my daughter just as much as any man could ever love any family. I think now the reality is the fact that because I'm not self-medicated and I'm not doped up, if I could use that term, the reality is harder for me because now I'm in reality.
You have to deal with it.
And like you said, I got to, you know, put my big boy pants on, and, you know, I got to look at my beautiful wife and realize I didn't cause this overnight, and I'm sure not going to be able to fix it overnight. But, you know, as they were saying, you know, but for the grace of God, go I to hear her say the things that she says, even though I've heard it a few times, even during our counseling sessions when I was going into recovery, really hard. It's hard. It's a hard pill to swallow, but it's one that I have to swallow and I have to take responsibility, Greg. And, yeah. You know, it doesn't matter if I was 22 right now or, you know, 52 or however old, I've got to face the reality of, and that's the hardest thing I think for people who are addicts, I think that's what causes them a lot of times to not really want to come clean and get help, is because this is the hard part. Looking back, the easy part, which I thought was the hardest part, going through recovery, this is way harder now than sitting over at Recover Us. Oh, bless you. All those days. The hard part now.
Lisa, while you sneeze yourself out of the chair, did you ever feel like you blamed yourself?
Oh, yeah.
This? I'm talking to Lisa. Did you ever feel like you blamed?
Yes. Okay. Absolutely.
Tell me how that works. Tell me how that works, because you didn't force any of that on him, but tell me how that emotionally plays in your mind. And it comes out to some type of reality in a spouse's mindset, because I've heard it time after time after time. And I just want to hear your side of that.
Well, you know, because like I said at the beginning, I would try to talk to him about it. And then when you get met with anger and resistance, after a while, you just back off and you learn not to do that anymore, because you don't want to cause chaos in your home.
Did it automatically escalate? When you brought up, it just went from here to here like that.
Yes. Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. And so you stop bringing it up. And so then it feels like you're condoning that behavior. And then also, you know, there have been times that I thought, man, if I would have left him 10 years ago and said, look, bud, I'm not standing for this, then maybe he wouldn't be or have gotten as severe as he has gotten. You know, maybe he would have taken some action earlier on. And I made it too comfortable and too easy for him to get to this point. So I've had, you know, both of those sort of back and forth feelings of, number one, I didn't do enough, say enough, wasn't persistent enough, but yet I understand why I wasn't. And at the same time, maybe I should have, you know, called him to account a long time ago and let him realize what he had the opportunity of losing a long time ago, so that that would have maybe spurned him into action. Maybe or maybe not. I don't know.
You didn't think you were enabling him, did you?
That's hard to say. I mean, I took care of everything with the household, you know, kept a roof over our heads and things of that sort. So I guess if that's enabling, I guess in a sense, if you're not feeling too much discomfort from your situation, then in a sense, I guess that is enabling.
What about the kids? What impact has this had on those beautiful children?
So there's a level of, I guess, disrespect there to a degree. They love him very much.
Of course.
But they've, you know, seen him. And like I said, he's never come in and drank around them or been, you know, violent in front of them, but they would see him come in and stagger to the bedroom and go to sleep for hours or things of that nature that I'm not going to go into specifically. But in my son, I saw a decline in respect and almost like a protection of me, because he's a teenager now. And so, you know, I feel like he's been angry, and then my daughter, I think it's made her feel how can I say it? She struggled with anxiety, and I think some of that is just due to the chaos that's been here, and I guess it was really compounded a couple of years ago. I had to have surgery, and it sort of came up a little that, you know, what if something happened? And I feel like she didn't have confidence that if something happened to me that, you know, she would be taken care of. And I think she was getting to the age that she was just starting to sort of process and understand that. But it suddenly made her aware of things that she was fearful of in the world that she wasn't aware of before or didn't know to be fearful of those things. And it was sort of kind of crashed into place all at the same time. So mostly I would say anxiety in her and a sort of an anger and a lack of respect in my son, probably.
James, have you both sat down, you and Lisa, with the kids and had a family meeting type thing of saying, hey, you know, we've gone through some bad issues here. This is what we're going to look at in the future. I mean, was there any type of discussion with them one-on-one or everybody together in the same room, or they just kind of sat in the and kind of watched it happen? Have you ever since you've recovered from
it? Yeah, we have a few times. I mean, you know, there's only so much that I can say to, especially my son. I have sat down with them and we've talked openly about my addiction. And, you know, I've been clear to my son now that he's 14, my daughter, she's 10. I've tried to be as transparent as I can, because for them to not, especially my son, to not make the same mistakes that I made, the same choices, you know, and you know, it's not been easy because, like, you know, she said, there is somewhat of a resentment that he has toward me. You know, I know he loves me and he knows I love him. And like she said, you know, I was never violent toward my children or my wife. But that the damage that I caused, you know, I've tried to talk with them, and they know that I'm where I'm at, and they know how I'm trying. And but you know, it's going to be it's going to take a long time for, especially my son.
You know, I think people use the byline that really irritates me. Kids are resilient. Of course, everybody's resilient to a certain degree. but there has to be a process in that resiliency. And I would love if you guys would ever allow me to talk to your kids and you know, one-on-one, even Zoom with you guys, kind of watching to make sure I don't say anything stupid or whatever, but to just sit down and really try to give them some tools of, and I think the book that is that's for teenagers is coming out with this one is going to be right down their alley. How do you deal when that cloud comes and don't know how to get it away? How do you deal with that and find a life lesson in it? And I just wonder why. Go ahead, Lisa. Yeah.
Well, I wanted to mention something else too, that it wasn't even so much as what James did as of what maybe they didn't have available. So like, so Benjamin, you know, he's 14. And, you know, having a dad there beside you to do stuff with you and take you fishing and teach you how to, I don't know, change a tire, you know, things like that. Whenever those things are absent, there's as much of an impact as if, as something that, that is happening. And the bad thing is, that even though, you know, we're in Christian circles, if, you know, if a mom is a single mom, a lot of times people will reach out to the kids or to the mom. But if you're married and going through it, there isn't anything there. Nobody says, hey, I know that, you know, James doesn't do this, so can I take your son fishing today? It's just not there. And so, you know, and I would try to speak that out some. It's just hard to find. You know, I had read James Dobson's book years ago, Bringing Up Boys, and a few other books. And a lot of their, you know, suggestions are to find other, you know, men that can mentor them. And it's really hard to find. This day and age, people are busy. You know, they have their own lives, their own kids. And I understand that. I'm busy, you know. So just bringing it back in a nutshell, it's not so much what was done as to the things that aren't done as well.
That's an excellent point. Tell you what, we're going to take our final break, and this hour is just flying by. But on the other side of this, I want to find out what you would say, both of you, to the husband and the wife that's experiencing the very same thing. Does faith have an issue and an impact on this, and how you relied on that? And then maybe what the future looks like for you down the road as you go out now and change the world, and how you're going to do that to secure that you're all okay telling your story and how to prevent it to come back. So that's kind of where I think I want to lead the last few minutes that we have. But we'll be right back on the last commercial break that we're going to take for the last segment of Breaking the Silence with James and Lisa Brown. Be right back.
From HCI Publishing, that brought you the international bestsellers, A Child Called It, and the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, comes the latest book by Dr. Gregory Williams, Shattered by the Darkness. This book describes the horrific abuse that Dr. Williams suffered at the hands of his father for over 12 years, and the damaging effect of keeping everything silent about that abuse for 30 years. If you're looking for that book that you can't put down, then pick up a copy of Shattered by the Darkness by Dr. Gregory Williams at all Barnes & Noble stores, Amazon, and Books A Million. Now, back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams.
Welcome back to the last segment of Breaking the Silence. I want to let you know, just look at this. I can just scroll on what people are saying about you guys. And I get lots of requests, but most of my requests is, Greg, will you shut up and let them talk? But your requests about you and your things are really good. But we're getting, making a lot of impact, and I just appreciate. And I know this isn't easy. So, James, of course, as the survivor, I appreciate your heart. But I want to be careful because I think there's a trait that happens when you overcome something and everybody applauds you. And there's going to be days that you and I are in front of 5,000 people on a stage, and when we walk off, we'll all get applauded. And Lisa's going to be standing there next to you and going, hey, I'm the one that went through hell.
Right.
What about me? So I know there's a point that you have to be careful with that. But Lisa, I really want to applaud you right now from the bottom of my heart to sharing, because there's people out there that listen to the show all the time that they say, what about me? I am the forgotten victim in this. And sometimes for you to survive, it's self-survival. You have to do it yourself. How much did Recover Us help you in the total recovery of the family?
You're talking to me?
Yes.
So just the fact, I have to say that each day that James came home, he was, because it was a program where he went for 10 to 12 hours or something like that a day. So every evening he would come home, he was excited about the recovery process. And most of the time he was pretty positive about that. They were just tremendous with him to really sort of help his frame of mind. Very positive and caring and loving, and really kind of came alongside him in a way that, so that made it good for us, because he wasn't coming home in this terrible frame of mind, like he didn't want to do this anymore. And he felt encouraged each time that he went. And so we also were then encouraged by that. So,
well,
they've been encouraging to us as well.
I have found them to be the most professional and awesome, not only people, but institutions and therapies and recovery places. I would highly recommend them to anybody. Recover Us in Carbondale, Illinois, just an unbelievable stats that they have there. Lisa, now, we only got a few minutes. What are you laughing at?
You get carried away. Sorry.
Oh, no. I'm the one that normally just rap. No, you're doing fine. There's nothing better than
that's
being
what I told her.
Do what?
I said I told her that she's doing amazing. And
oh, she is. And there's nothing better as a host to just to sit back and let it come out, because that's what it's all about. It's not about me. This is about you guys. And from the people that's sitting and watching right now, Lisa, what advice do you have somebody right now that they have a spouse? And we won't put this on the man or the woman. It happens on both sides of the fence. We both know that. That's in the beginning of this, of saying something's going on and it's a vicious cycle. I don't know how to get out of this. What do I do? What advice do you have for those people right now?
I would say don't wait and let it go on too long. Also seek out someone around you that can support you and help walk you through the process. A lot of the time I didn't know how to handle things or what to do. And so, and sometimes I felt like the people around me didn't really know either, but how nice it would have been, you know, when you're in the middle of it, you just feel sort of beaten down. And it takes plenty of energy just to get through the day. So if there's someone that can come alongside that person and say, let me help you, let's deal with this together. So I would say to that person to find someone that could maybe support them, give them strength during that time, address issues quickly, and not maybe stay in a situation that is going to drag on forever. You know, maybe get away from that situation, because I really feel like James may have been helped years ago if I had taken action a long time ago.
You talk about maybe the intervention type of situation?
Yeah, possibly. Although, honestly, I don't know how it... I feel like he almost had to come to the point that he wanted this for himself. I had entertained that thought before, but I think forcing him to go, he wouldn't have went through it willingly, and I'm not sure that the results would have been lasting. So I think it had to come to a point of me going, you know what, I'm done. And I think we were at a point of being done pretty much. And I think he saw that finally and was fearful, and that sort of woke him up a little bit, and he decided on his own to then take action. But I forcing him into it, I don't know if that would have worked.
Yeah. You know, I have a feeling, and it wouldn't be a bad idea, that as James is writing his book, that you don't write your response behind each chapter of this is my point of view during this point of his life, and it become a husband-wife back and forth, then I think everybody would, because there's not that much. I had a good friend on a few months ago, Kelly White, that was on, and she had a husband that was an alcoholic, and she wrote a little journal book and had great response from that. But there was just not that much help out there. So I know there's people out there that need help. And your responses tonight have just been unbelievable. How much did faith play in to this? And you mentioned, because I think it's important, that we think we have all the answers to church. Hey, come to church, you'll be fine. Well, that sometimes isn't the case, because you get these instances get overlooked. How much did faith, I know with you personally, but how did faith play into this? James, either one. James, you, Lisa.
Well, it, of course, you know, faith is everything to me. You know, as far as if I can say this about Lisa, my wife, I know beyond a shadow of a doubt, I'm not the trophy husband. I'm not, when this podcast is over, I'm not going to win husband of the year. The reason I'm saying that, I make light, I believe with all my heart that it's no longer I who live, it's Christ who lives through me. Her faith in God and watching God work in her to keep her as my wife, to keep her where she was at, I owe it all to him and her. I take no credit, no pride whatsoever in my recovery or the fact that I'm still married. So yeah, faith on her part, I believe was the main factor of the success. So.
Now, Lisa, we have about 45 seconds for you to respond to that. We're winding down. What I know you already mentioned about faith, but let's just take it from maybe moving forward.
Yeah, so for me, I mean, the joy of the Lord is my strength. And each day, I don't know how someone could get through the hard times of life without the Lord by your side, honestly. I don't know what else to say about that. That's it in a nutshell. I mean, really, I feel like the Lord, my beliefs are so that, I believe in marriage and commitment, and I wanted to remain true to that commitment. And so that sort of bound me, not saying that if there was, you know, abuse and things like that, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that, short of abuse or adultery, you know, I feel like marriage is something that you're committed to. And I always felt like the Lord would somehow work through me to help James. I just didn't often know how to act to do that.
What, he, Lisa, he has. God's used you to bring him back. And I think, I just have a feeling that you two together are going to be making an impact on so many people that you have no clue tonight even. But I think in the years to come, you're going to be able to step back. And I think your children are going to be able to go, wow, they've showed us the example of what we can endure in our life too with their own families when they get to be that age of not just bailing out like some do, but to stick in there and love through it. And I appreciate you both so much tonight coming in and just sharing your hearts. And I can't wait to get on my texts and emails to find out all the different responses. But Lisa, thank you for sharing. Just open up your heart to everybody, and I appreciate that. And you guys are dear to me, and I hold you in high regard. And there's a little special place in my heart for both of you. Thank you very much. Like we always want to do, if you want to reach out to James or Lisa, feel free to just do that through me. I'll be glad to pass on your emails to them and let them know that somebody wants to reach out to them. Do that through the Shatter by the Darkness Facebook page, PBS radio page, through the archive issue side of it. I'll be glad to pass that information on to them. Thank you both for being here. God bless you. And we're going to be seeing a lot more of you. And I can't wait to see what God's got in store. Tell you what I always like to do at the end of every program, we only have very few seconds, is I always want to let you know that no matter where you're at, no matter what you've gone through, and here it is right here, you've seen 25 years almost of marriage, and a lot of those years were being in turmoil, but there was always hope. And I want to let you know the hope is greater right now in this marriage than maybe it's ever been. It could be even better than it's ever been before on the other side of this. I always want to let you know that no matter what you're going through, there's hope. Join us right here next week, 8 p.m. Central Time, every Sunday night for Breaking the Silence, live from Houston, Texas. Thank you all. Have a good week, and God bless you.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1 for the next episode of Breaking the Silence.